This afternoon. My name is Peter Wingrove. I'm the CEO of ShoreMind, and I'd like to welcome Sam Twistleton, OBE, Catherine Carden, Andy Taylor, and David Gumbrell. My distinguished guests this afternoon are all practitioners within education. With schools going back on the 8th, I think it's really important that we explore what should a well-being program look like at school, over and above the academic project.
Mental health, I feel is present in all of the conversations with practitioners, but it may well get squashed out of a conversation in the staff room as we do the kind of catch-up curriculum, and we would just want to press the fast forward button to catch up, whereas actually what we need to be doing is pressing pause. So for me, it's not about policies and plans, it's about actions and doing.
Very similar to David, I think when we talk about schools being prepared for everybody to come back, it does, as David said, there's a lot of processes and practices, and with those can bring a lot of anxiety, particularly for senior leaders, making sure they're protecting their children and protecting their staff effectively. It can bring a lot of concern and anxiety for senior leaders to making sure that those things are happening smoothly. But David's absolutely right, there needs to be that thought of, we need those processes in place, absolutely, but actually the focus shouldn't necessarily always be on the academic side of things. And I think schools are in a much better place after this return to school, with more developed online systems that they've had for the education processes, that they're probably being more confident about where children are academically now in this return to school. It's more that social side, what social skills have the children lost or may have not developed, and it's about providing opportunities for those to be, you know, actions, time being put aside within the curriculum to, you know, redevelop those skills and see actually how are the children themselves kind of feeling about this and helping them to move forward.
How does a school leadership team build that time for those social skills development?
I think first of all we need to put into context that whilst there's a lot of talk around the catch-up, we need to bear in mind that all children have been in the same boat. So, but first and foremost, let's not worry about that first, because they are not going to be in a place to learn until their well-being and they're re-socialised back into school. And we have to remember, it isn't just about the social aspect. These children are coming back and we need to listen to their stories. And I really think that's going to be an investment in the first part of our children's return. We need time for their stories to be uncovered, because they're going to come back in some cases as very different children. Mm. Some will have suffered experiences that they hadn't before. Some will have come back with differing needs than they had before they left. Physically, they're going to be in a different place. Lots of them have not been getting up. They've not been getting dressed. They've been sat in their bed. They haven't been doing much exercise. So physically sitting in a hard chair in a school might be a challenge. And of course, we're going to have children that have suffered lesser and greater extent of bereavement coming back. So we need to find out their stories and where they are, because we can't assume they're the same children that went off on their Christmas holiday. Until you can establish that, then we can think about how we can help them catch up, if that's the term we want to use, with their learning.
I think, first of all, I understand why there's been a lot of catastrophizing and a lot of talk about catch up. And in some ways, I'm happy to reap the benefit of that if it means that more attention and more resource gets put into the system. But actually, we do need to frame the conversation in a much more positive way. First of all, we need to feel joyful at the prospect of having our children back again and how brilliant that will be. And actually just having them in a room with us will bring about a lot of the things that they've been missing. Yeah. And I absolutely think that what Catherine was just saying is right. Letting them tell their stories in itself will be a sort of therapeutic process for them. But actually will give us lots of information, which is just the very information that we need in order to know how to respond to the differences that Catherine described that they might come back with. Some of them, some of those differences will be positive. You know, they will have, some will have developed resilience, some of that will have developed independence. All of us have hopefully got better IT skills now. So I think it's about moving forward rather than looking back and sort of wringing our hands all the time. I think it's great, you know, hopefully we've got spring coming up. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we have another spring like we had last year, which means that we can take children outside much more, do a lot of that physical stuff, which is not only kind of making up for the, what they've been lacking in recent times, but actually also giving them that opportunity to develop, to regain that confidence, that social confidence, that physical confidence, which, I mean, I feel a bit scared, I'm gonna be honest, at the idea of going back into the big wide world, you know, and I'm in my 50s. So what it feels like as an eight-year-old. But I think we can really quickly overcome all of that if we just have a really positive frame. We allow ourselves to just be indulged in the joy of having children back and being in the same room as them.
So just to add, we have to bear in mind that not everything that has happened has been negative. So some of the children's time at home has been so positive. They've spent time with their parents, they've been going out on walks, they've been in nature. So they have actually, that it isn't solely negative. We really must reframe that to being that it's only going to be negative what they're coming back with. Actually, they've learnt new skills potentially as well.
It's a lovely idea, isn't it? Let them tell their stories. I love that phrase, and I think it's a really clever phrase. Because I think there are positive stories to be told, and we need to have those positive stories. Those who have had a bad experience will need to be lifted by those who have had good experiences or dealt with it well or been in nature, as you say. But I think if we can give them time to tell their stories in a safe, trusting environment, I think a lot of good can come from adding on the social element of being back at school and celebrating and being joyful and the security that brings. So I don't think it's going to take a huge amount, as long as we recognise it in the early stages, that we're going to allow time in the curriculum and head teachers are going to justify it.
There's going to be various types of mental health challenges, I expect. So there's going to be those that are quite resilient and positive and upbeat about coming back to school and having had a positive time at home, but there will invariably be kids that have had a tough time and are coming back. Perhaps they feel academically a bit behind their peers, or you know, that maybe they've had bereavements or something in their family, where family members have died as a result of COVID or whatever the case may be, and they're now coming back to an environment where they're out of what has been their safe zone, but there will be those difficulties to overcome, those anxieties. It's not like lockdown has ended and COVID is gone and we're going back to school and everything's normal. It's almost like this fine line that school leaders now have to walk between enforcing the safety of everyone, on the other hand, trying to encourage people to say, well, listen, it is what it is, we're with it. Let's work to the rules. And then hopefully everybody will be safe, but we can still enjoy ourselves. We can still enjoy spring, and we can enjoy getting outdoors a bit more, perhaps taking some classes outdoors on the fields and into the parks, doing outdoor activities.
It's learning from when schools returned, particularly in the autumn when everybody was back. A lot of the local schools that I work with were worried because they knew they had such sort of severe rules and routines that they had to stick to, but actually they found them ultimately quite beneficial, and they found that behaviour, particularly in secondary schools, was improved because of the tightness of the boundaries and because of the bubbles and the need to sort of decrease the number of different teachers that children were spending time with, that the relationships really benefited from the fact that less teachers are spending more time with particular children. And I think if we can build on that, and I totally take what you're saying, there will be some children who've had trauma at home, and but there will all be some children who are traumatised at the idea of going back to school as well, who've enjoyed the quietness of home. But most children benefit from really secure boundaries, and those boundaries as being not as scary things, but as something that give you security, give you certainty, give you predictability, give you some pattern to your day, which is probably what some of them will have been kind of lacking. So I think it's important that teachers and children are sort of helped to frame it in that way, and yes, go outside and all the rest of it as well, but see that the rules that you have to follow when you are in school actually are helpful. They're not just helpful to you know, keeping your hands clean, but they're actually helpful to giving your life some predictability and some structure that you will benefit from.
What are some of the biggest challenges then facing school senior leadership team?
Well, I think senior leaders to have a duty of care to look after their staff. And I think it's going to become ever more challenging, because if every child has got their own story, so have the adults also got their own story. But we need to recognise that, you know, they do feel that they aren't in a psychologically safe place in school. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether you put the structures and procedures in, they will feel, because of their contact, because of their experiences, they may not feel psychologically safe. And therefore, again, that needs to be recognised and dealt with. And I think that schools have got to lean into this topic and theme rather than leaning away from it. And I think we're going to have to read body cues. We're going to have to read nuances to really get to these stories that staff and pupils both have.
We've been working with a few schools on training mental health first aiders, and putting, you know, these kind of resources in place. And I think that's really important for schools to be looking at now. Of course, mental health and well-being is something we all have as human beings. It's not as simple as just saying, well, that's just assigned to one person or one responsible person in the senior leadership team. So you can have your mental health first aiders, which we really encourage you to have. But the thing with a mental health first aider is that it's an emergency measure. The mental health first aiders are there for when there's a crisis. At Shoremind, we believe very strongly that early intervention is a much better path to heading off serious mental health challenges later on. And in order to get that early intervention, we all need to be upskilled in the emotional literacy of mental health and well-being. We need to arm the children with that. We need to arm the teachers with that.
There are sort of three things I wanted to say. I think it's a teacher's job, like I said, to make sure they take the time to listen to the children's stories. And I think it's a senior leader's job to make sure they take the time to listen to their staff stories. Pre-COVID, if a school had a really strong culture around well-being, they will probably fare better at this point. It's those schools that perhaps didn't, that really, really need to be honest with themselves and pay greater attention to how they're going to bring their staff back and make sure that well-being is on the agenda, on top of the agenda. Senior leadership teams need to stop and listen to their staff and talk to them about what things they've done differently during COVID that actually, at coming out of COVID, we would like to continue with. And I think that's really, really important that we don't just flip back to how it was before.
Picking up a little bit on what Catherine's saying, you know, some of the strengths of some of the things that have happened because of COVID related. I know lots of schools, you know, teachers have to be off the site by 3:30. And I think, you know, in order for a deep clean to happen, but actually that, you know, just being able to, for staff to be able to get home, to be able to have that real home work-life balance, I think is really important. For me, I think the biggest impact that kind of the COVID systems have is the isolation some teachers can feel even being within the school. So things like the staff room, you know, just being able to, my fondest memory is sitting in the staff room having a laugh with colleagues, and the boost that gives you to your well-being, being able to sit with other people who are genuinely passionate and enthusiastic about teaching, you can really kind of build each other up. The isolation and the way the bubbles work, it doesn't facilitate that, but it's how then senior leaders provide opportunities in staff meeting time for, you know what, actually, next 20 minutes, let's just catch up with each other. Let's have the opportunity to speak to each other and get that human impact back. But I know it's so difficult when there are so many processes. It's prioritising that as a time. I think that's really key for me.
So buying the time out of the academic project and out of the work time to actually spend engaging on a human level and doing nothing more than really just engaging with each other, just getting back.
I wouldn't even put it as buying the time out, though, because I think it's contributing to the academic project. I do think there is a real physical constraint around that isolation bit that you were saying, Andy. I think that was a sort of unintended outcome of the sort of social bubbling. But again, better weather might mean that we can do a bit more about that and congregate outside rather than having to stick in our classrooms, maybe. We were consulting head teachers about what they want to keep and what they want to change when we go back. And what a lot of people were saying is that they've, one thing that COVID has done has helped them to really strip back to what really matters in education and take away a lot of the noise. And a lot of that noise is actually the stuff that takes up the time and creates the stress. So they were definitely coming back with an appetite to really prioritise mental health, social wellbeing for their staff as well as for the students. I am heartened when I talk to school leaders about how carefully they are thinking about this and how they want to learn from what we've been through, and there are some things that they had to change that they want to keep changed.
What sort of things are they hoping to cut back on, or were they afforded the opportunity through COVID to kind of cut back on?
They felt on reflection, you know, that the things that they'd been assessing previously, mainly for accountability reasons, had not prioritised actually what's going to be best for these children. I think there was a recognition that some of the things that they've been measuring and reporting and have been taking up a lot of time and creating a lot of stress ultimately were not in the pupils' interests, and they don't want to go back to that scenario. I felt very strongly about that.
We know that children's mental health education became compulsory in September last year. Children are now coming back to school, and there's a real need to have that mental health education curriculum delivered, because we want to empower children to have better emotional literacy, not just to self-diagnose themselves, but to actually have an understanding of some of the basic conditions and things that they might be struggling with, so that they can verbalize how they're feeling and identify to a responsible adult and somebody that could perhaps help them.
So I think firstly, we've got to give it time. Then we've got to remove the stigma of being able to talk or wanting to talk about it, or being or trying to get it to try and get a conversation going. So, but I think COVID again gives us the excuse to have a conversation about mental health. So if we've got the time and we've got the excuse, then it's the skills of the teacher to facilitate that dialogue.
And some of the feedback that I've got from teachers is that they don't have time.
We need to be really careful when we talk about time, because if we wrote a list of everything the teachers needed to do in the week, the time would run out really, really quickly. So I think it's about mindset, because what we need to encourage, and this is where I think senior leaders can support, but it needs to be a skill that teachers develop themselves in their teams, is that when we're planning, we must move away from chunking time. To my mind, it's very much about how you thread things into things that already happen. So it's about building discussions around mental health into certain points of the day, maybe that point when they first come in and are doing some reading, say in primary school, or in the mentor tutorial sessions in the morning. It's how do we thread things through? And that is also really important, because otherwise you end up having, well, we did that on Monday, you know, kind of approach. So it is about threading it in. Otherwise, if you're going to look at it in chunks of time, there will not be time.
So I agree with that. And it's absolutely threading it in, not seeing it as something, oh, it's mental health time now. But it's also, again, recognising the benefits of having the children back in school, how much more effective you can be. There's been some really good benefits while children have been in lockdown about how much more systematically schools have engaged with their parents and the benefits of doing that. And from that, a much better understanding of children's home circumstances, of what's going on in the home. And hopefully the beginning of a much better relationship with those parents that you would hope would continue when they're back in school, where you'll have the benefits of the children are there in front of you, but hopefully you'll keep that relationship going with the parents that you needed so badly when they weren't in front of you.
What guidance should senior leaders now be giving their teachers as they come back into the staff room? If they were to stand in front of the team and brief them, what advice would they be giving their team?
It's about creating that culture in the classroom, where actually culture in the whole school, where these discussions can be had very openly, very transparently, that there is time during the day. It's about not being pressured to, and again, as Catherine was saying, we've got to be finished by this by 11 o'clock. We've got to finish this. And I know things like staggered playtime, staggered lunch times have actually helped with building a bit more flexibility. And I think it's that culture of, we have time to be able to talk about this if it's important. And as we all know with children, they will choose the time that works for them when they want to talk about things. They won't wait until you've your allotted 20 minutes on a Friday morning. They will say, actually, this is my time. This is when I want to talk about it. So we have to have allow them to do that.
One of the things that perhaps we're overlooking here is the burden on the teachers. Mm-hmm. And to that point, I feel that senior leadership teams should be looking at ways to allow teachers to decompress. You know, there's going to be a lot of stress under the teachers are going to be under now, even more than normal.
I think it's about systems and processes and culture. And I think schools do benefit from a whole school discussion at regular intervals about all of this. Yeah. I'm the deputy chair of the Doncaster Opportunity Area, and one of the things that they've been doing there is bringing in trauma-informed training for schools. Many were doing it already, but the fact that everybody's doing it again collectively has had real benefits across schools, so within schools and across schools. And it gives the opportunity to revisit the procedures and the systems side of things, but it also creates that culture of talking about it and recognising your own triggers as well as pupils' triggers.
Catherine?
And just building on from that, I think there's a lot that could be learned as well through looking at some standardised practice from special schools. So quite often, staff meetings in mainstream schools are very much information giving. They haven't had to have staff meetings. That's been one benefit of a reduction in meetings. So let's not go back to that. But how about using some of that time to embed some notion of sort of group therapy or offering of supervision and things that are much more standard in special education?
I want to explore with you the fact that schools are unique organizations in a community. Its customer is the pupil, but the pupil is a child that belongs to parents who also live in the community who support the school in other ways. So I want to ask you your opinion on what senior leadership teams in schools should be doing in order to advance children's mental health, to ensure teachers' mental health. Should they not perhaps be working with parents?
The danger is if you don't connect with the community, then you take the burden on yourself. And if you take the full burden on yourself for the mental health needs of the community, we're in a difficult place, and teachers don't have that capacity to take on everybody's burden and be the solver of all problems. And I think schools need to be quite strong that it's not the school's responsibility to deal with the children's mental health needs. It's a collaborative approach between the parents and the school to deal with mental health needs of those children. Mm. So I think communication with parents is going to be crucial so that we don't inadvertently take on this burden and then held accountable for that. Mm. So I think strong communication with parents to share that responsibility is going to be crucial in the early stages to get that dialogue with parents.
What I'd like us to do perhaps is just comment on if you were to advise a senior leadership team today in preparation for the 8th of March, what would your advice to them be?
Viewing it really positively, which as I say, in my experience, most people are, they're really looking forward to it. Recognising there will be constraints and all the things that they got used to some extent in the autumn term, coming back, but actually, again, trying to see them as positive, seeing as some as things that may give children security and familiarity because they are familiar with them now because they were so sort of drilled in them in the autumn term. I think building on what everybody's been saying about time and space, that time and space can doesn't mean that you build in an hour on this and an hour on that. It's more permission. Worry about the guidelines as much as you have to, but really focus your attention on the joy of having your pupils and your staff in front of you again.
I think it's about for them taking permission for themselves as well to be vulnerable, to say, you know, if they to reach out, if they are also as a senior leadership team needing that mental health support as well. I think, you know, we can often overlook that actually sometimes head teachers are there at making that ultimate decision maker and they are ultimately responsible for that. And whilst they have the, you know, backed by the governing body, they are taking a lot of responsibility for the safety of their staff, the safety of their pupils, the well-being of everybody. And I think it's sometimes to remind them to look after their own well-being, to take that time to prioritise themselves, be transparent, be open. And, you know, by doing that, you would create that culture where others feel that they would be able to be open and transparent about how they were dealing with things, the processes and the pressures they were under. I think that, for me, it's permission to be not okay and be able to kind of open up that dialogue if you need to.
is absolutely about the joy of having that community back together and establishing some kind of normality again, but as well seizing on the moment that you've got children that for the first time have really, really seen the value of school. And we've not had that before. They've not known anything different. And it's that value, just of not as an educational institution, but the holistic value of school. And as well, senior leaders seize, we talked about parents, but seize on the fact that, again, for the first time in living memory, or certainly while I've been in education, parents are seeing just what a tough job teachers do. Seize that now, because this is a moment in time where you can seize those things and change the culture in schools and begin to work much closely, more closely with parents in and get that momentum carried forward.
I think that I think the idea that you're not going to fix everything overnight, I don't want people to have a longer term view of this. Where are we heading by Easter? Setting a goal by, not that everything's going to be fine by the 9th of March, that but not to try and get too perfect back to normal by too soon, that to give ourselves room to breathe, to believe that everybody wants the best for the education of their children. It's not going to be like that. It's got to be over a longer term period. What do we want to achieve by Easter? What do we want to achieve by half term in May? What's acceptable? What's doable? And just slow down, because I think everyone's going to want it fixed straight away. And when we had the previous date of the lockdown, everyone did it immediately and wanted everything to be fixed. And then it was a kind of, well, we've done this and we've done that. It's not competitive for your context, what's right for them. But slow down and get it right for the human beings in that space. Get to psychological safety over time, not in hour one, day one of the 8th of March.